Blog Talk Radio.
No longer is the only option for retirees a gold watch and a rocking chair and the thrill of watching grass grow. There is more to life than sitting around till the end. And our special guest today will tell us how he has reinvented himself and started a second act in carefree Chattanooga, Tennessee. Just when you thought that he and his broadcasting days had ended, he's starting a brand new show this Sunday. We're talking to Maurice Lewis, and I'm Carol Copeland Thomas, host of Focus on Empowerment. Welcome to today's show. Welcome to the show. This is Carol Copeland Thomas. I'm so glad that you've joined us. It's nice and sunny here in Boston, and we hope that the weather is cool but pleasant and sunny wherever you happen to be, or if you're downloading the show afterward, we hope that you are enjoying the weather and life itself. I'm excited about today's guest, and we're going to talk to him in just a minute, but just want to remind you about the Multicultural Symposium Series. I'm so excited about those who are continuing to join. We have a new member, Juarez Farrington. She is the program director of the Prostate Health Education Network, and we welcome her to the Multicultural Symposium Series. We'd love for you to join. In the month of August, you can go to www.mssconnect.com and find out more about it. And I'm also excited because in just a few short weeks, we're going to launch our brand new website at mssconnect.com, and we'll have lots of information there for our members and for the general public alike. So excited about that. So we'd love to have you to check out our website in the coming weeks. If you have any questions or if you'd like to email me, you can always do that at tellcarole, that's T-E-L-L-C-A-R-O-L-E, at mac.com, or give me a call at 508-947-5755, and we welcome those who are listening in the chat room and also who are listening live to this broadcast. A little bit later on, we're going to pay tribute to Ramadan, which started yesterday, and give you a sense of its history and the significance in the Muslim community. So we'll talk more about Ramadan later on. But I'm excited about this biker and this former broadcaster, but really not a former broadcaster because he is starting his new show on Sunday, but someone really who has successfully reinvented himself, not in one particular area, but he's actually moved to another part of the United States and doing it quite well. Former anchor person in Boston, actually the first African-American male anchor to anchor nightly news in Boston, Maurice Lewis. Welcome to the show, Maurice.
Well, thank you very much, Carol. I'm delighted to be here.
I'm just glad. I'm going to ask you lots of questions and do what I can to help our listeners to understand the dynamics on the air, off the air, and that motorcycle that we have you pictured on in our promo materials, and just what life has been like for you now in Chattanooga, Tennessee. So first of all, my first question, I've been just racking my brains trying to figure this out. Why Chattanooga from the Boston area?
Well, my wife, Terry, and I, we looked around, and we wanted to find where is our retirement dollar going to have the greatest value.
Mm-hmm.
Climate-wise, will we still have some semblance of multiple seasons for things to do? I'm an avid motorcyclist, so the proximity of what's available road-wise and beauty, that was an important. And then for my wife, Terry, being a history buff, what's there? So we looked at a lot of places, and we decided on Chattanooga. Well, we didn't know anyone here, had never been here before, but we asked our realtor, who was one of the number one realtors in the Marlboro, Boston area, to find us her twin in Chattanooga. We wanted to have like a one-stop shopping person,
mm-hmm.
and she did, so we put our house up for sale there. Came down here, looked around, bought, sold, and closed in 40 days, and we were here in like 42 days.
Wow, that is some strategic plan on speed dial, should I say.
You know, it was so much fun. I would think that part of not being afraid of moving around a bit came to me because I was in the military very early and very young, and I just thoroughly enjoyed the challenge of making adjustments and realizing that you're not always going to be where you want to be at the time you want to be, and you can't always leave when you want to. But in this particular instance, we were fortunate enough to be able to say, you know what, thank you very much. Love Massachusetts, but there's something else that's out there, and it sure sounds exciting.
Well, that's extraordinary. And what's interesting, I went online and I see that you're not sitting back in the rocking chair watching grass to grow. You are actively speaking up and have gotten involved in a city council debate that's going on, I believe. I pulled it offline, and you have some comments to make about one of the city councilors. Is that not correct?
Yes, I was at first very encouraged by the fact that we had this young city council of African-American gentlemen, and very articulate and what have you. Then I started to look a little deeper and to listen to his show, and he used the N-word on his show, and he tried to cover it up, but it was just too flippant, and I thought, well, okay, that's not acceptable under any circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
If that's how you feel about anybody, that means that's how you feel about your mother, your sisters, or the fact that he is the city councilor. Is this how you view a constituent that comes through your door looking for help? Do you look at them and say, here comes the N-word through my door? No. The other thing that this fellow is also
we're talking about this is City Councilman Andre McGarry, who has a radio talk show in Chattanooga. I just did a whole piece on which term is it, African American or Black, and I specifically talked about how upsetting the N-word is, and it should not be used by anyone. So you just validate what I was talking about with a recent blog.
Oh, yeah, you can't say that it's a term of affection, because if you could dig up the bodies of all those people, that N-word was the last thing that they heard before they were lynched, shot, burned, or killed. I don't think that they would say that it's a term of affection. But anyway, the other thing that really galled me was the fact that Mr. McGarry is also a city councilor, and during the time that he should be as the head of a committee conducting committee hearings, he was on the air drawing a second paycheck. So I thought that, you know, like that was two strikes against the person who's holding a chair, that being an African-American male, I only want the best to sit in that chair. He represents not just me, but the hopes and dreams of our young people, too. So I went to the city council meeting and called him on it and basically just told him, you know, we deserve the best and the brightest, and your behavior indicates that you're not giving us that at all.
Well, it certainly got picked up and talked about, too, and Chattanoogan.com talked about it, so that's interesting. Have you received a response from him, or have things changed since you have voiced your concern about his use of the N-word?
Well, some of the southern gentlemen down here say that Mr. McGarry can charm a dog off of a meat wagon, so it's not like he is not good with words. He is an exceptionally bright young man. I just wish that his moral character was a little higher.
Well, let's go back in time. You're talking about this particular word, the significance of it, and certainly the relevance that it has here for African Americans in the United States. Just going back about 20 years now, when we look at what's happened historically in South Africa with apartheid, we had a piece of that history in Boston. You were very much on the air broadcasting. And tell us about the relevance and the significance for you as an anchor person, as a broadcaster, when Nelson Mandela came to Boston back in 1990.
What a historic week and set of circumstances that occurred there. I had the pleasure of working with a publicist, a woman who owns a very good PR firm, Colette Phillips, in Boston. And we had the task to pull together all of the radio stations in Boston to play the South African National Anthem at the time that Mr. Mandela was there. And also got an opportunity to MC his program at the Hat Shell.
Right.
Which put me in the proximity of Danny Glover. Harry Belafonte was there. All of the greats in the civil rights movement that could be there were there. It was interesting then and now, Carol, as you and I know, people of our race have gone through a number of descriptive terms. The favorable ones, so to speak, colored, Negro, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
Black,
right.
African American. Now what? And I think I like the way you posed the question to people. How do you want to be described?
Exactly.
Exactly.
Have I lost you?
Oh, I'm here, and we have a little bit of an echo, so we'll see if we can correct that.
Okay, I can hear you now.
Okay, and I heard you, and I'm sure that our listeners have heard you too. We were just doing a little bit of playback 20 years ago when Nelson Mandela and his former wife, Winnie Mandela, made a very magnificent trip to the United States after he had been released from prison, came to Boston. It was a tremendous celebration in the city of Boston. My children sang in that children's choir that performed at the Hatch Shell, and you had a very significant role then. When you look back at your career, Maurice Lewis, what, in addition to that being a highlight, what else was a memorable moment as you were climbing your ladder of success in broadcasting?
Being hired in Chicago to come to Boston, packing up my Oldsmobile with everything that I had, getting here in a driving rainstorm, and my first experience with a rotary. For people who live in other places, a rotary is like a traffic mechanism where you can get lost in and not come out until you're a year older almost. I tell you, it really gave me a warm greeting in terms of how gentle and responsive the people of Boston could be, because in this rainstorm, I was totally lost. I could see where I wanted to go, but one of the favorite things about Boston, our expressions are, you can't get there from here. And people would stop in the rain and give me directions, and I thought to myself, this is really going to be okay. But coming to Boston when I did and realizing that just how far up south Boston really was, and I mean up south in terms of it had the reputation of being the cradle of liberty and all, you know, all these progressive institutions of higher learning, and I started to look at, well, where do people live? Where do we work? What's the communications media like, and what's the newspaper, what's the print side like? And I found that we were really sorely lacking. And fortunately, there were a group of like-minded individuals, and we all got together, and we started to lobby and win friends and influence people to open up the doors, not to just give us something, but just not stand in the way.
Right.
So we were able to form associations, and a lot of our former members are still on the air, and others have gone to great things.
And these were minority broadcasters, all operating print and, I guess, electronic media, television, radio, et cetera, in the Boston area. This was in the 70s, correct, Maurice?
That's correct. You saw our faces in the 70s. Perhaps on the weekend, no one until I came through had a live show on television. Everybody had to, if it was by, for, and about people of color, it had to be taped, and there were no sponsors until I got there. Everything was like public service announcements, and I'm thinking, like, you know, if I'm making money for you, you're not going to be as quick to get rid of me, so let's sell this show, and they successfully did. But what produced, the product that came out of that, Carol, was really, really great, and you know what has happened in the struggle, too. This was a struggle that was not just unique to Boston, but it was happening in Philadelphia and in New York. And we realized very early on that your 15 minutes of fame is exactly that, as a race of people. Someone has to be moved out of the way for black Americans, for African Americans, for blacks, Negroes, coloreds, to move into the mainstream. Now, you have to do your best, because it's like water on a hot griddle. You have a limited amount of time before the next group that's behind you says, you know, I want my piece of that pie, Carol, and I know you know that.
Well, it's a matter, and therein lies intra-ethnic tension and inter-ethnic tension, and progress all mixed up into one. You know, you bring back those days and the early collaborations that you had with other journalists, broadcasters. I think about Sarah Ann Shaw, who is also retired here in the Boston market, but also one of the first black reporters at WBZ. This is a large 50,000-watt, the 50,000-watt deals with their radio program, but one of the largest stations in the area. And what she did, she was a trailblazer. I also think about Lewis Overby, who you probably remember being a journalist with the Christian Science Monitor. He just passed away just a little while ago in his 80s, and he also was a trailblazer in the 60s and 70s along with you. So when we see, and Liz Walker clearly with the role that she played with WBZ, and she's now very active in the community, in the church community, when you look at those who came by here, came by Boston, also in other cities, Detroit, Philadelphia, Washington, D.C., opening up the door so that the younger broadcasters now can very effortlessly move from station to station, move from one market to the other, you guys paid the price for them.
Well, yes, we paid a price, but also we reaped some enormous dividends. And part of the satisfaction in this, to me, if you're in it, it's not just about the goal. It's about the goodness of it, too. Our motto, our rule was, if you get ready to leave, before you even think about leaving your position, you have to have at least two candidates that you helped to train that are ready to step into your shoes. We did that out of necessity, and it unfortunately, I don't think I see or hear enough of that right now, but we did it out of necessity. You know, it was necessary because it would be too quick for management to revert back to, we would hire one if we could find one. So we wanted to remove that argument before you, it's like being a good lawyer, before you ask the question, you should know what the answer is probably going to be.
Hmm. Yeah, you know, that's a very significant point, not just dealing with broadcasting, but many industries too. And I think a lot of professionals now have forgotten that again, because those who fail to learn the lessons of history are doomed to repeat them. So when you were in those days of struggle and discrimination and trying to overcome that discrimination and moving on to progress, you never forgot about the succession plan that you personally had to be responsible for. And I think that's really missing with a lot of professionals today. There's not that personal commitment to a person of color succession plan within a respective industry. It's needed. It really is, because you're right. What happens, things go back to the way they were, and then the struggle, then it's like the Mount of Sisyphus. Things just start all over again, just rolling up that hill.
One of the things that I was impressed with and also very saddened about was the crab in the barrel attitude that permeated Boston at that particular point. You could go down into what would be called the poverty zone or into the hood or what have you. And at that point, there were like 25 different self-help agencies, this and that, and you could knock on one door and ask, what do they do next door? Mm-hmm. I don't know, and I'm really not interested. And I have found that it's not just Boston where that happens, but it happens in a lot of places until someone comes from someplace else and looks at all of those doors and the empty stores and opportunities that are there and takes advantage of them. That's what I'm doing here in Chattanooga. I came here and I'm looking at, wow, there's a void here. Matter of fact, it's a Grand Canyon. I can't fill up all of the space, but here's what I see as an opportunity. Now, by going to the city council to give my opinion about what I expect from a broadcaster and what I expect from a city councilor, there was another radio station there. And their news director said, you know, we like what you said. Nobody's ever said this to this guy in public before. Would you come over and talk to us?
Mm-hmm.
So I said, yes, I would. And one thing led to another. So my new show, which is called Generations for the Over 40-plus crowd, starts this coming Sunday, and I'm very happy to say that you, Carol Copeland-Thomas, are going to be on the show with me. I recognize talent, and I try to keep it close to me, so you know I reached out for you first, right?
I am so excited about that show, too, and I'm excited, again, that, again, this is your second act. You've reinvented yourself. You haven't really left broadcasting, and we must say that so many good things have happened here in Boston. Boston is not the city that it was in the 70s. It has progressed just tremendously. But, again, I look at how you've made your transition, but you're back in broadcasting. People recognize that talent that you had. That's fabulous, and I look forward to Sunday's show.
It's also interesting when you talk about what happens in the second act. How do you make the transition? What's the move like? Is it an isolation period? It can be an isolation period if you let it. Coming into a new place, I mean, there are ways that there's a welcome wagon everywhere.
Yeah.
And there are probably there's a core group of a few people that can get you involved almost anywhere. And for me, because of the year that I was born, AARP was not a bad place to start. The Chamber of Commerce was not a bad place to start. But what actually got me even deeper involved in the transition and staying within my craft, I picked up a magazine called Road Rash, and it's a motorcycling magazine of Chattanooga. And I thought, I read the articles, and being an avid biker, I thought, well, let me go over and meet the editor.
Mm-hmm.
And I met him, and we started to talk. He says, you know, people think that we are a redneck magazine. I said, well, how do you see yourself? So he says, would you like to write for us? So now I do a column on whatever I want to talk about in a motorcycle magazine. So and through that, Carol, people come up on the street. You'd be amazed at who is underneath these helmets and underneath all that leather and black clothing.
I see them every Sunday on the highway. Yes, lots of people. That's
Carol,
pretty amazing.
Motorcycling for some people is like Halloween every day.
You know? We're talking to Maurice Lewis, a former broadcaster, very well known and respected here in the Boston market, now retired and starting his life all over again with his lovely wife in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And I'm Carol Copeland Thomas, host of Focus on Empowerment. We had a number of questions that came in, Maurice, two of them related. And one question, this came from Terry. She said, my husband and I moved out of state, retired, and didn't realize the social networks really came through jobs in the community. And she says, it can be isolating and it takes time to reestablish a network when you relocate. Do you have any hints for Terry and her husband and others who are also facing the transition and, oh, all my best friends when I was in school, they're gone or they're not here anymore, and things are a lot different, let's say, if you're moving back home, wherever back home happens to be, or wherever you happen to move?
Yeah, you know, like the Internet is your best friend even before you get there because you can find out an awful lot about what's going on. And it does not take a long time, wherever you would consider moving to get into that town's local and regional newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
You can pick up a lot of information from there and begin to learn about the climate. If you're politically active, of course, you'd like to get in touch with the parties. I was going to say Democratic and Republican, but you and I know that has, man, that's changed. So now
we'll talk about that a little later on, too, the politics of moving.
Yeah, but, in you know, looking at those kind of things, and asking your insurance agent where you are to hook you up with an insurance agent in your new place, and asking your current banker if they have an affiliation there, and tell them, look, I don't want to come here as an isolated person. Who are the people? Who are the 5 to 10 people that I should meet in this town?
Mm-hmm.
And go from there. I tend not to give people any advice about using church. That's a personal choice.
Okay. But that's that's a very relevant one, and I'm a big church goer, so you know, my advice to anybody who is church going or faith based would be to connect with the local faith based organization in the town where you're currently residing, because that's another network of opportunity for you.
Well, Carol, I have to admit this. When I got here, I was found people are very friendly, and I'd meet somebody or just strike up a conversation, and very quickly, where do you go to church?
Oh, yes.
And I said,
you're in the South. Yes.
I was honest. You know, I was honest. And I said, well, I don't go. And that conversation would usually end real quick, or you would get an invitation. You need to come to my church. There is huge competition down here for membership and for people who are willing to get involved with faith-based organizations. So
exactly.
This one elderly woman, she told me, she said, son, listen to me. The way you handle that down here, she said, when they ask you your personal business like that, just tell them, you know, I haven't made a decision yet, but when you go to your church, will you say a prayer for me? And she said, and then you get the hell away from them.
Oh, that's very diplomatic.
Yeah, and I thought, you know, like she's like an octogenarian, and I'm thinking, hey, listen, I'm going to listen to her. But I've learned how to answer that question.
Well, I think, again, this question came from Terry. Carol has a similar question. Carol talked about the fact that she has made a transition. She's now living in Chattanooga. She's retired from another state. She's got involved, interesting, in gaming, which is quite amazing. You know, I didn't realize that gaming is so big. We're talking about not casino gaming, but this is online gaming, where you can be involved in a game like a board game with people literally all over the world, and that's how she happens to be meeting people. Carol doesn't have children, but also is concerned about the isolation factor, even though she seems to be using technology quite well, but just wants to know about that intersection of technology and this transition and the fact, you know, what is it like for people who don't have kids who move?
Well, you looking at your background, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners, we are all active people who are no strangers to volunteering. And nothing keeps you more in tune with the community, its people, and the whole mood of how things are going to happen than volunteering in a couple of different places. I mean, whatever your passions might be, no matter where you go, there is an opportunity for you to get involved and to get something back, and also to get something from that in return.
It's interesting that you say that, because I'm looking at Carol's question, and that's exactly what she's done. She said she's found it very easy to get connected by volunteering within my fields of expertise, and that volunteering has maintained my sense of empowerment and societal contributions with many retirees, in which many retirees tend to lose. So that's another great example where you, and gosh, there's so many volunteer opportunities. I always like to say that you can get involved with local organizations. You mentioned about that, those 25 organizations back in the 70s where they didn't know where the next door neighbor, what the next door neighbor was doing. There are huge opportunities for people to volunteer locally, either with a very local organization, grassroots organization, or with an affiliate of a national organization that happens to be in your respective area.
And, you know, when you look at people who are in my age category, or the so-called boomers, et cetera, I think a lot of us, we have an awful lot to give, and we have been so blessed and so fortunate to receive what we have and still be able to talk about it. That, you know, it's just unheard of that we would not spend some time reaching back for some young people, and not just, you know, taking them to a movie or buying them a pair of $90 Jordan shoes or whatever they are, but actively be prepared to spend some time all with the organization so that you can say, well, you know what, out of the 52 weeks of the year, I give like 24 hours or 48 or a week to some volunteer organization to help out. And it really pays dividends, and you can help somebody along. And when you look back at the way they grow, 15, 16, 17, and even younger, that's what we should be all about, is being part of the whole community.
And I think, too, just to go along with your point, too, the two women come to mind who have recently passed away in their 90s and well past 100. One woman who just passed away up here in this marketplace, 101 years old, huge funeral. Also, Dorothy Height, who just passed away, and she was almost 100. Three funerals almost, just with the pageantry that was magnificent and certainly paid tribute by dignitaries, presidents, former presidents alike. President Obama helped to officiate, read the eulogy at Dorothy Height's funeral. The key with them, one woman, Ursel Wells, who was 101, was pretty active until probably the last 5 or 6 years. Again, getting involved, giving advice, engaging in Mother Wells' case with her family, but just being present and being there for younger people, and certainly the case with Dorothy Height, who was always full of energy and enthusiasm for younger women and younger people. So it's almost like you've got the storehouse of resource and knowledge, no matter how good or bad life has treated you, and you can certainly use that as you grow older to reach back to younger people and connect with them in very meaningful ways.
You know, your phone doesn't ring. What you get in the mail are bills.
Hmm.
You might go to church, and you might have a couple of friends, and you don't do an awful lot. Hmm. Well, my grandmother used to say, son, the Brinks truck does not follow the Hearst. Okay?
Yep.
So in your heart and your head, I mean, you got two repositories for wisdom, knowledge, strength, things of value. Share them while you can.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And spend your good currency while you're alive. You know, when you can make a difference, most cities will have some type of committee where citizens can get involved on the planning. What do we want our city to look like in 10, 15, or 20 years?
Right.
And very few people will volunteer to do this. And unfortunately, from my experience, a lot of people from the communities of color do not participate.
Mm.
So when you get handed something that you permitted someone else to decide while you chose not to go, you can squawk, but you know what? That's hollow. So
That's an interesting point because and oftentimes those planning boards, urban, rural, whatever, their planning is done years in advance. Years in advance. So if you're talking about planning urban renewal that's going to take place, let's say, in 2020, 2030, 2040, you need to get involved now from a voluntary perspective, giving your feedback. Certainly green is really big now, so the environmental issues are being discussed in terms of urban renewal or planning or city planning. So you have to give your ideas now, give that feedback now. And you're right, communities of color are as important as mainstream America, very, very important.
When you listen to the complaints, you know, they're keeping all the good jobs for themselves. I love this boogeyman theory. You know, who are they? Okay, they are we. We are the man. I'm not coming up during the 60s, Carol. I was so fascinated to hear people say, you know, the man is holding us back, and I'm thinking to myself, who is this man? I got to meet him because if he's got this much power, I need to be sitting at his table. Then you know, the reality set in. You know what? I am the man, and you are the woman.
Mm-hmm.
And, Carol, people like us, we're not just going to sit by and wait. So when you go to these planning committee meetings and you get a chance to hear, well, wait a minute, there are going to be these kind of jobs associated with this development in 5 years, we can get our people ready.
Mm-hmm. That's true. I mean, and that's empowerment. That certainly is civic engagement and activism. And who better to do that than someone who has had a long career with a particular company or industry or a particular talent, recently retired, now having time and energy to get involved on a personal basis. I want to shift gears a little bit, and there was a question that came in from Peter in Raleigh, North Carolina, and he wanted to know about your support. We're talking about politics here, your support of Republicans like Mitt Romney and Charlie Baker. Talk to us about your political bent. You could do this now because you're not an anchor person, and I know that lots of journalists like to remain neutral, but give us a sense of your political thoughts, and has that changed now that you have moved to Tennessee?
Well, I am not a Republican. I want to make that absolutely clear.
Okay.
I have been a Democrat. I have never been a Republican, but now I am an independent. In terms of the Republicans individuals that I was very high on. It started with former Governor Ed King, who was also the director of the Massachusetts Port Authority. That was based on an individual. I did support Governor William Weld because I liked, as a Republican, he was so progressive and just open, and his word was good. So Absolutely there. In terms of when I was looking for another change in career, one of the guys that stepped up and said, you know, I have something that's very interesting, happened to be Governor Hargreaves Paul Cellucci of Massachusetts. And his outreach was, you know what, we have a lot to offer. Yes, I am a Republican, he would say, but look at my record, and if you find me wanting, get involved with me, help me fix it.
Mm-hmm.
So that was great. Later on, James Swift became the governor, but I had a job at that point, a fairly very good job in state government. James Swift was governor. That relationship was kind of like cool. Yes, I did work with some other people. Now, Carol, here was the interesting thing. I was approached by the Asian American Republican Association.
Mm-hmm.
The Asian American Republican Association. These were all men and women that I had worked with and volunteered with in various capacities that were getting behind the Republican Party at that time because they were not getting jobs through the Democrats.
Hmm.
So they felt like in order to have a seat at the table and to be able to benefit from the so-called spoils, not a negative word when you talk in politics about patronage, that you had to get out and work for a candidate. And if you delivered for your man or your woman and there were jobs to be had, you would be in line. That's the way the political system works, should work, and always has. So, yeah, I worked with him. Go ahead.
How has that changed, or has it changed, now that you're in Tennessee in a different political arena?
Not much at all. I'm not yet involved with anyone here. I've been here a year, so I've gotten a chance. One of the first things I did when I came here was register to vote.
Good.
Okay.
For you.
Please. I mean, all the people that died for this freedom, you better believe I'm going to register. And not just register, I vote. And I just voted recently.
Great.
So I'm looking around, and we have had people of color and women in offices here. I'd like to see more happen. I really wish that there were term limits. But what has interestingly happened here, Carol, and you're going to be on my show this coming Sunday, August the 15th,
mm-hmm.
but there will also be some representatives of the Tea Party and other individuals who have launched a recall effort for three people, the mayor and two city councilors in specific. They want the mayor out because, in their opinion, his tax increase is going to be harmful. They want the two city councilors out because they support the mayor and were allegedly rude to the Tea Party members when they tried to testify before a recent city council meeting. So what's interesting, even though we don't have term limits here, for a recall movement in Tennessee to be successful, the number of votes that you got in the last election,
mm-hmm.
there's a percentage of that we get with signatures, and if they get that percentage of signatures, you are recalled.
Wow.
And it doesn't mean that you're automatically out, but it means there has to be a special election. You have to run again, and in many cases, you will get knocked off. So I kind of like the spirit that's happening here. I'm not in favor of the Tea Party for a lot of things that they have permitted to infiltrate their ranks. And I think you know, Carol, that when you hold an event, you have to really, really protect your reputation by watching who comes in and disinviting those whose messages are harmful.
Yeah, it becomes your brand. Whoever is there and whoever espouses whatever their beliefs are, that becomes part of your brand if you're not careful.
No. Politics has a long way, a long history here in Chattanooga. As you probably know, the South has no shortage of very shrewd politicians. They might not speak real fast, but that mind is going.
Oh, yes. I'm going to pay attention to what's taking place in your area. And are you going to have some Tea Party representation on your program on Sunday?
Yes, I will. And I've tried to get some of the fresher voices that have not been heard on a consistent basis because I think there are some elements of what these activists. Carol, it's amazing. When you and I were in the civil rights whole vanguard out there, I don't know, we would just call activists. But now they're called the Tea Party.
Well, that'll be an interesting show. I can't wait to be on Sunday. We're talking to Maurice Lewis, now community advocate, activist, current broadcaster, getting ready to launch his new show on Sunday. What are the call letters of your program?
WPLZ, 95.3 out of Chattanooga.
Great. Everybody knows that, and it's on from 8 until 10:30 on Sunday morning.
Absolutely. We will also be talking about, Carol, there's an author, Dean Arnold, who wrote a book called Old Money, the New South. And as you know, if you want to get yourself, if you're moving from one place to the other and you want to really get yourself integrated in or understand how the thing was, how the place was built, who's running it now, and where is it going, the first rule of anything, follow the money.
That's true.
And in Dean Arnold's book, this is the guy that also wrote America's Trail of Tears about the Cherokee Nation. But he just spends a fascinating web of where the money came from, who has it now, and Chattanooga being like a number two destination spot for retirees from around the world. We are really diversifying here.
Wow. That's going to be
so the new money, yes, the new money, Carol, that's coming in, hopefully they will have the kind of diversity that your clients need. And if they don't, I need to make them aware of you.
I'd love to be look for new opportunities wherever. So we will continue to talk well beyond your show. And I'm actually going to have you back on because this I'm seeing there's a lot of interest with the transition that you've gone through, obviously your broadcasting background, but most importantly, the questions that came up from our listeners and your friends and people on your list, just this whole piece of when you transition and you successfully have sold your home in 40-some-odd days, you move to a new location that you don't know much about, but you know that's where you want to be. You know, for you, it was easier in terms of getting anchored to your new community as you continue to get anchored, but for some people, it may be a lot more difficult. So it's the type of topic that I want to bring up again and again. What do you and your lovely wife, Carol, do for fun?
With Terry. Well, she used to ride on the back of the motorcycle, but she ain't doing that anymore. And quite frankly, that's fine with me, you know, because like I ride with another group of people. We just... she supports me, and in my column, which I write for Road Rash magazine every month, I find a way to incorporate her favorite phrase. It started very early on when I would tell her, I'm going out for a ride, and she would say, have a nice ride, baby. And so I always find a way to work her into every column.
Great.
But she loves to get out and do historical stuff. We've got... two world-class aquariums here, which would be surprising. A saltwater. Now, Chattanooga, we are not on the ocean, but we have... we have world-class aquariums, one saltwater, one freshwater. So there's a lot to do there, and we've got mountains everywhere. I mean, everywhere. And almost every mountain that you can find would have some type of Civil War significance or just phenomenal views of five different states.
That's incredible. I've been through Chattanooga, been there many years ago. It is a beautiful part of the country, and I can imagine with all the mountains that are there as well. So,
Carol, can I just offer one quick tidbit before you do that?
Absolutely.
I know everyone has probably heard the song, Pardon Me, Boy, is that the Chattanooga choo-choo? Yeah, yeah. Well, guess what? This is one of the few cities in America that of its size where there is no train service.
Who would have thunk it? Great train song, no train service.
Yeah, so I called down, and the lady said, well, sir, if your name is Freight, we can book you out of here, but passenger service, no. They're still working on that.
And the food, how's the food there? I mean, we have great food here in Massachusetts. How's the food in Tennessee?
Harold, don't go there. don't do this. I'm probably going to pay for it, but I am very disappointed. Down here, it's about size and not quality. They never met a box of salt that they did not like. I don't know if that's because of, you know, the heat where, and you need to replenish, you know, salt, but it's Gatorade for that. But it is really, really interesting to be so close to Atlanta where you have all of this innovation in terms of cuisine.
Yeah, 4-hour drive. Yep, 4-hour drive. Mm-hmm.
No, hour and 20 minutes.
Oh, just an hour and 20-minute drive.
Yeah, hour and 20 minutes to Atlanta.
Wow.
There is so little innovation down here. Hmm. I got to say, I'm just very disappointed. People here eat, but you don't hear people talk about dining. I mean, there is a group. There are a few places where you can go. There are a few very innovative chefs, and we were hopeful because we have a big Volkswagen is building a major plant here that would attract some new and innovative restaurateurs and entrepreneurs. That remains to be seen. But if you are a foodie, which I consider myself to be, I mean, that's a self-anointed nomenclature there. No, there's only about 5 or 6 places that are really happening. Other than that, it's a chain, and you people just go there. And I don't know if it's like Southern hospitality where you're just so polite that you don't want to tell the person or the chef or the cook, you know, this is so bland. Can you do anything different? I don't know if it's just, you know, polite Southern hospitality or they've got a captive audience and they can get away with it.
Well, that sounds like an opportunity for a younger person who is getting ready to retire, who was in the food industry. You may want to think about Chattanooga to go. That would be great. You know, when I said 4 hours, I'm going back to the 70s when we used to drive from Chattanooga to Atlanta when I lived in Atlanta, and it took 4 hours to get from Chattanooga to Atlanta. Now you have all the superhighways, and they've, you know, cut the time down, so now you're saying it's an hour and 20 minutes. My goodness.
Now, Carol, you're just being polite to say that, you know, you are the person that obeys the speed limit. Okay, that's what you're really saying. you are not speaking for the rest of us.
But the highways help.
Oh, absolutely.
This has been a great conversation talking to Maurice Lewis and just a wealth of history and experience, but putting it to really good use in Chattanooga, Tennessee, where you currently live. Any words of wisdom for our listeners who are getting ready to retire, getting ready to make moves like this? And also we have listeners who are having to move back home because they've got to take care of parents. I have countless friends where that has happened, where they've had to just pack up and leave their jobs because their parents, either one parent or two parent or some elder relative, needs them. Any suggestions for people who are in that kind of transitional spot?
Yeah, well, if you have time to think about your retirement and you're not there in the next couple of years, whatever amount of money that you think you are going to need, try doubling that. And to really understand that you're going to be making, especially if you're going to an area where you have no support system immediately, where you're not going to have family and close friends, but you will need close friends wherever you're going to go, to really consider what is it that you currently do and what activities do you have and are those activities available where you're going so that you're not trying to just come into a place totally cold, but you want to slip into a role that is somewhat familiar even though the room is different. So that's a big help. The Internet is very, very important in terms of letting it do some of your advanced work before you get where you are going. Mm-hmm. And there are all kinds of ways using the faith-based networks, for instance, is good. Using various organizations in your sororities and fraternities of your people who went to your college. I mean, they are here in this city. And for people who are still involved in some type of business activity, to look into business network, BIN, Business International Network. They've got chapters just about all over the world. You'll find people who are into what you're into. So, Carol, just listening to shows like yours where you have interesting people, and here's one of the things that I wanted to really thank you for and the people at Blog Talk, Talk Radio, is I can go back and I can hear a show of yours that I missed and still pick up something, wow, this is going to be something I should be listening to or getting involved in.
You're right. That's true. Blog Talk is wonderful. And again, because anyone can listen anywhere, and I've had people to listen in other parts of the world, and it can be downloaded at any time. So it's like a 24-hour on-demand program platform, and there are countless shows on here. So we'll talk more about that later. This has been great. Maurice Lewis, I want to thank you so much. You've given us so much interesting and wonderful information. We've covered the bases. We're definitely going to have you back on. I think one of the most significant things that you said was that you, first of all, didn't necessarily look at the motorcycle magazine at face value, looking at it from the lens of others who were stereotyping it, but you went and you met the publisher, one thing led to another, and now you are contributing to that publication. That's a great way to get involved, really, really an ideal way, and there are countless publications in all kinds of places where others, again, can relocate, retire, and can contribute accordingly. So that was a great piece of advice along with the other great information that you shared with us. One more time, tell us the call letters of your radio your radio station, the name of your program that will be on this coming Sunday, August 15th, from 8 a.m. to 10:30 a.m.
It's called Generations, and the call letters of the station are WP as in Paul, L as in Lima, Z as in Zebra. WPLZ 95.3. It's on the FM dial, and you can pick it up on the net. And, Carol, I am so looking forward to you being there. You know, you are part of what this whole thing about staying invested, staying in contact, and pushing and pulling each other along. I go to your blog and your website, and I see the kind of people that you are constantly pushing ahead and being supportive of. And we need that, and I just wanted to say I appreciate it. And ask you, please continue, because it's important to us.
Thank you so much, Maurice. I appreciate those words of compliment to me, and I just say hats off to you, hats off to that wonderful motorcycle that you have and all the trips that you're going to be making everywhere. We're going to bring you back probably and talk more specifically about motorcycle riding in the future. Maurice Lewis, thank you so much for being a guest on my program.
Thank you, Carol.
All right, take care. Well, that's been fun, and it just lets you know all the possibilities that can take place with anyone who wants to relocate, restart their lives, reinvent themselves. It's like a second act, and we certainly have heard it with Maurice Lewis. We thank him so much for being on our program. We're going to play a little tribute music and then come back and share with you a few thoughts about Ramadan, which started yesterday, and the significance of it, so stay tuned. Well, there are major religious groups in the world. We know about Christianity, we know about Judaism, and we know about Islam. The Muslims are a growing religious movement all over the world, and their high holy month is actually in play right now. Started yesterday, early this year, because typically I know of Ramadan taking place in the October time frame and sometimes November, but it is early because of a particular reason. We look at Ramadan 2010, as taking place. It is one of the holiest months of the Islamic calendar, and fasting in the month of Ramadan is one of the five pillars of Islam. The month is spent by Muslims fasting during the daylight hours from dawn to sunset. They can't eat anything, I believe, perhaps based on their health issues. Water may be ingested, but no food at all. It really just depends on the particular circumstances of individuals who are practicing their faith. But typically, they will then have a large meal at dusk. So as the months go on, as the weeks go on, that is, we're going to talk about Ramadan, its significance. I am going to bring on a guest who can give us more information about Ramadan, but the month will, this month of August through September and over the next 30 days, Muslims all over the world will be celebrating Ramadan. The timing of it is interesting. It's really based on a lunar calendar. We actually are operating on a Gregorian calendar, and I believe this is the earliest point of Ramadan in modern history. I picked up some information from the Christian Science Monitor, and it says this is the first time in nearly 30 years that Ramadan, timing-wise, depending on the lunar calendar, has corresponded with the hot months of the Gregorian calendar. We actually function on a Gregorian calendar. So it's pretty early this year, but it's going to go for the next 30 days. And it begins, it's based on that lunar calendar, and the months begin when the first crescent of a new moon is sighted. And since the Islamic lunar calendar year is 11 to 12 days shorter than the solar year and contains no intercalation, Ramadan migrates throughout the season. So that's why it can be early, it can be later. Ramadan starts, the Islamic day starts after sunset, and the actual and estimated start and end date of Ramadan from 2005 to 2015, you can actually look online and get that information. So they have the dates all the way as far out as 2015, where it's going to be, the first day will be June 18th. And it'll end on July 16th. So again, because their days on the lunar calendar are shorter, it just plays into why Ramadan literally can rotate throughout the entire Gregorian calendar year. But it's a fascinating study of reflection, and fasting has a very significant meaning, and it's so interesting because fasting is important in Christianity, just like it is in the Islamic faith. Fasting is important in many religious groups. It's done for washing away the sins. It's done for purification purposes, and it's done as a discipline to prepare one to have a deeper level of commitment to a higher power. And in this case, higher power would be Allah. I want to talk about this, and I want to sort of set the stage for this, because in so many instances now, because of our political climate that we currently live in, there's a lot of misinformation about the Islamic faith. And this is a great time to set the record straight so that people will understand the do's, the don'ts, the ins, the outs, the belief system of millions of people, and more, almost billions of people in this world who happen to be practicing Muslims, who are now practicing their faith during the month of Ramadan. So we're going to talk more about that with my blog that Maurice talked about earlier, and certainly on the radio program we're going to have somebody on so that we can get a clear understanding of what it is and how important this particular part of their calendar year happens to be. Tomorrow is Friday, and tomorrow is a high holy day with Muslims. I just learned that several years ago. And again, we want to talk more about the significance of Friday and those who go to their respective mosques all over the world, and probably bring up the controversy that's taking place with the new cultural center that's being built around the ground zero level of 9/11 in New York, and how, unfortunately, it's being used for political purposes to dissuade people from advocating and supporting it. So we'll talk more about that. weeks and months. But we want to say we are certainly send out our thoughts and our prayers for our Muslim brothers and sisters who are commemorating and observing Ramadan during this point in their history, and we hope that things will go very well for them. And we hope that things will go well for you, and we thank you so much for joining us today on our program. We'll be back next week with another exciting program. Go out and make it a great day. This is Carol Copeland-Thomas signing off, and we'll see you next week.